Hi, everyone. I'm Eleanor, and you're listening to Sweet Deviation, the podcast designed to help you navigate, organize, and get creative while living with ADD. In each episode, I'll share personal stories, tricks, and insights that I've used to break through daily challenges. And together, we will lean into the diagnosis and stop fighting our natural tendencies. Welcome to episode 3. Today we'll be talking about changing our core beliefs with coping cards. I mentioned those at the end of episode 2, so we'll be covering that later. But first, I wanted to add a little bit of an extra layer to illustrate the childhood trauma and how that affected the undiagnosed ADD in me. What happened for me, as I first described in episode 2, was this fear of abandonment, and it grew stronger and stronger as I reinforced this fear by falling into that loop that I was talking about of this negative self-talk. So for instance, if a lady at the checkout didn't return my, you know, have a nice day with a reciprocal kindness, I just assumed that she knew just how unlovable I was. So I felt like, and I would tell myself, that if my own family couldn't love me enough to stick around, well, why should I expect a stranger to be any different? And you might think that this is some hyperbole, you know, a real exaggerated example, and that it might be an extreme claim. But I can tell you it is not overblown. I would get myself wrapped up in this notion that I was completely unlovable. And all of my childhood traumas were like hooks. So anytime anything happened, it didn't just happen in that moment. It took me right back to, you know, a childhood me that was left. So it wasn't enough that I hadn't made the last sale or that my kids hadn't called in a week. In my head, it was always proof of my unlovability. And this went on for years. And in my attempt to cope, I learned that it hurt less if I left first. And this became a terrible cycle for me. At the first sign of trouble, I left jobs and friends and anything else that made me feel vulnerable or that felt dangerous or fear that I might be abandoned. So even the smallest little disagreement, I would just hit the road. I tried for years to manage this fear. I lived for my family's approval. I was the first in my family to go away to college, but the response was not pride in my accomplishment. Instead, I was met with, you know, who do you think you are? Or I guess you think you're hot shit now. My father even believed that I was going to go wild and God knows what he thought I was going to do in college. The winter of my senior year, I went home and saw how happy my family was with my sister, who had recently gotten married. It was a quiet affair. I didn't even know she was thinking of marriage. The celebration came after their trip to the county courthouse, I think. It was such a non-event, but my dad seemed super proud, and that got my attention. I thought that maybe if I got married and I settled down, that they would see my worth. So it wasn't just but a few months after that I flew to Vegas, and I married a man that I'd known for about 4 months. Now, they didn't share in my joy, but at least I had my own family now, and I was determined to be a better mom than I had had. Still, despite all of my good intentions, my fear of abandonment packed its bag and moved into my new marriage with me. Now, there'll be plenty of time to tell you about the crazy ride that those 15 years would be. But for now, let's just agree that I really, really did try to stay and be happy. And looking back since my diagnosis, I really think I did okay despite having no framework for understanding the loops of negative self-talk that I'd been caught up in for years. So now let's fast forward to June of 2020. We're in the middle of a pandemic. I have a diagnosis. I have the time and I'm eager to get help. I sign up for counseling and the entry paperwork was pretty intense. They asked questions as far back as potty training. Like seriously, no kidding, there was nothing that they didn't ask. But I was so ready to get better, and despite being uncomfortable with some of the details of my childhood, I wanted to be 100% transparent. And how else would I get better? And it took about 3 hours to fill out the paperwork. I had to recount some abuse and both physical and emotional injuries that I'd had. And I came to terms with my pathetic need to have my father see me and approve of me. I was 50 for crying out loud. And honestly, it started to sound really, really pathetic. I cried and then I became really angry. But I was determined that I could fix it. I started the counseling sessions With all of the hope in the world, the counselor was nice enough, and because of the pandemic, I was doing my sessions from home. We video chatted and got comfortable. I wanted her to like me, so I tried to be upbeat even after spending a day binge crying about all the bad news going around us. I wanted her to see the effort I was willing to apply to get better, so she suggested I read a book called The Slight Edge. And basically, it was a call to keep going and not quit and just keep trying. She also suggested that I journal, which I've done since I was really young. I was starting to grow a little frustrated with the kid gloves she was using. You know, when were we going to dive into the real trauma? So the next visit, she suggested that I use checklists to keep myself organized. And by now, I'm just getting kind of pissed off. Seriously, lady? You went to school for this? So there I was, starting to get the hooks in me again. I started to think, oh, she hates me. She sees me hurting and she doesn't care. I fought back the urge and reminded myself that this was a process. I didn't get this messed up in a couple of weeks, and I shouldn't expect to get better overnight either. So with that, she said I was done. She thought it would be a good time to end our sessions. She did invite me to call back if I ever needed to talk again, though. Talk again? I hadn't even scratched the surface. I was gutted, and I felt so abandoned. Fortunately, I was already taking a low dose of Strattera, and I found that it helped me with my impulse control. So I didn't cry. I thanked her. I hung up the phone, and then I set out to figure my own shit out. The medication was helping me stay focused enough that I could see my collection of self-help books that I had amassed since returning from Vegas, a missus all those years ago. I reached past the Manifest Your Destiny and Wake Up Happy titles and reached for an old worn paperback circa 1980 titled Telling Yourself the Truth. I won't go into detail here since the book is work and worth taking a real close look at, so we'll do that another time. What I will share is that it was the foundation of my coping cards. I knew that I wanted snapshots of the book that I found helpful. I knew that I would lose my notes in the piles of paper on my desk and I would be able to find them when I was having a moment of crisis. So I took a small stack of index cards, punched a hole in them, and used a binder ring to keep them together. On the first card I wrote, "What are you feeling now? What happened? What did you do? How did you feel? Is it based in truth?" Now these questions helped me identify the trigger. If I was in a misbelief loop, it identified my impulse response and the effects of that response. The first few times were difficult, but I couldn't lie to myself. I didn't allow for a card that said, "Tell me all about your old hooks." There just wasn't that space for that. It was a very specific question, specific to the very moment that I was feeling then. So here's an example. I'm feeling angry and slighted. I keep getting interrupted when I speak, and I feel unimportant. I'm getting walked over, and I feel invisible. What happened? We were all talking, and I was going to share an idea, and everyone just kept talking over me and restating what I had already said. What did I do? I clammed up and didn't want to talk anymore, and then everyone made a big deal about it. How did you feel? I felt stupid. Okay, so the last question is it true? Well, no. I know that I am important to Jim. He wouldn't do anything to hurt me intentionally. So now I had to argue the truth. He is supportive. He likes my ideas. He and the others were probably just excited with me, and they wanted to show their support by reinforcing what I had already said. Now, the second card asks, "Are you in love or fear?" If I can honestly say love, then I'm done. But if I still feel fear, I ask the question on the card again until I feel at peace. Now, this may seem like a lot of steps, but I hope you'll try them. You can see an example of mine in the show notes. This is just one of the coping cards. This deals primarily with the impulse control and negative self-talk tendencies. It takes practice, but in time, you'll be able to identify the routine and self-correct in the moment that you're in without having to write any of this down. Now, I still use them regularly. On occasion, I'll get into a loop and I can feel it happening. So I'll just kind of excuse myself and take a little bit of time. If I have my coping cards in my purse, it'll give me a chance to run to the restroom and just kind of get my head about me. I know it sounds, I just don't know how it sounds to anybody else. I'm telling you, for me, it is what stops the loop for me, because I can get to a space where I know that there's something sure here. It's not my emotions. This is just a real simple process. And you all know how I feel about process. Now, very recently, I used them because I could feel myself getting into a funk. My son, who's now 24, was home for Christmas, and he mentioned that he didn't feel a connection to his culture. And despite my many attempts, my kids were never interested in learning to speak Spanish. They preferred to embrace their father's Japanese heritage. It makes sense, you know, the Asian stereotypes that the kids lived with growing up in a Houston suburb meant that they must be good at math, and maybe that they could Tokyo Drift or something. Being Mexican was not as awesome. I totally get it. He continued, though. He said, well, we never really had family holiday traditions. And because of my relationship with my family and the fact that it was so broken, holidays with my kids were generally just us. There were no cousins and no real fanfare. Now, he shared this information with us while Jim and I were preparing to make tamales. And in my head, I'm thinking, hello, this is your culture. And the old hooks came in. And I began to get really irritated because what I heard him saying was, you weren't enough. And I don't resonate with the Mexican side of who I am. I started to blame my family. If it hadn't been for them, and if I hadn't been so broken, and if my dad had been a better grandfather, and on and on and on and on, I felt that if only all of these things, then my culture could be interesting. Now, at that point, I excused myself to my office, I pulled out my cards, and I came to this conclusion. Above all, I wanted my son to be happy. After I asked myself all of those questions about how I felt and the disappointment and the resentment that I felt, the fact is I could choose right now to make some important thing happen for him. And one of the tricks that I have found, and I wish that I could attribute it to someone, I don't know, this is something that has come up in my years of reading, but when I get stuck, I'll try to find a random word and use that word to kind of prompt me past my stuckness. So this particular day, I opened up a book, and I had said the number 18. I remember it still. And I went down 18 lines in the text and 18 words across. And the word was individual. So I thought, how does this word, individual, fit in the context of the problem that I'm in now? And what it said to me was that it was not about me. It was about my son and about his desire to find something that mattered to him and to feel connected to something beyond just what's around us. So I sat with that and I started to feel a real comfort about it, because even if my parents couldn't give it to me, I was empowered and I had the sense to not guilt him into, you know, you never appreciated me and I did this for you and we could have done that and you all never showed interest. I could have done all of those things and I probably have in the past. But today, after the coping cards, I was able to set that aside, see that it was not about me, and then I was inspired to help him find his culture. I jumped on to the Ancestry.com site. I ordered him a DNA kit, and with all the fanfare I could muster, I walked into the room where he and Jim were playing some games, and I just told him, I said, son, this is what I want to gift you. And I didn't know how he was going to respond to it. And honestly, I didn't know how I was going to respond to his reaction. But what I found was he was completely grateful. And I think he felt heard. And then I felt empowered because the loop didn't get me this time. It wasn't about me or my injuries or my past or my father or my lack of anything. It was my ability in this moment to be the person that my son needed me to be for him. So I heard him and I felt complete joy knowing that I could do that. And I don't know how else to say that if I go back and look at those cards, there was 100% peace and love in that. There was no longer a fear. There was no longer a jealousy. And the look on his face was my gift that night. So I know this is a short one today, but I do encourage you to go to the show notes. I'm going to give an example or a few examples of what this looks like for me when I do my coping cards. Now, keep in mind that this coping card is just one of several, and you'll make your own cards. You'll find things that trigger you, and you'll have to find a way to get yourself past that. But what I love to do is I keep those cards on that ring binder. I took the index cards, hole punched them, put them on the ring binder, and then I attach that to a clipboard. And the clipboard just has empty sheets of paper. So whenever I do need this therapy session, I sit down with them, I ask myself the questions, and I answer them honestly. And then I have record of that process. And the more you do it, the more you find that you don't really need to write it down. You can get there in the middle of the conversation. When you're starting to get hooked, you can stop in the middle of it and say, nope, this isn't right. This isn't true. And you can adjust that. And for me, and the type of ADD that I have, it is that impulse control that is critical. The knee-jerk reaction in the past had always been so fast. And what I feel now is it gives me a chance to put some space between the trigger or the event and my response. And in that little bit of time, I'm able to really look at it honestly and determine whether or not my interpretation of the event is true and honest. Then I can make adjustments from there. And I don't think it's perfect. There are times where I just screw it all up. And that's okay too. But it's a place to start. And for me, it has been a wonderful tool. I've really been able to allow myself that space to figure it out. And maybe the counselor is doing somebody some good somewhere. The only thing I can tell you is that I didn't quit on myself. I didn't quit. I didn't cower and feel unlovable. I was able to turn it around and show myself enough love to find the solution myself. So it's not to say that I won't need help in the future. I probably will. But for today, I'm confident that those coping cards are going to do their job. And I hope that you'll give them a try. Again, check out sweetdeviation.com. Look for episode 3 and you'll find the coping card examples that I'll share there. Until the next time, I hope that you've enjoyed this episode and that you take time to be kind to yourself and allow yourself a sweet deviation.